I don't know if you ever heard of the book Rulers of Russia. It was written by Father Dennis Fahey. He was an Irish priest who lived from 1883 to 1954. And he was one of the greatest writers of the century on opposing all of this corruption, which he called Judeo-Masonic corruption, mainly the top people at the top of these things that are generally, a lot of them are Jewish and Mason. Some of them are just Masons, okay? He was quoting, the Rulers of Russia was about the takeover of Russia in 1917, and he documented in there how Zionist Jews were, or communist Jews, whatever, were flown in from Brooklyn, New York, and Douglas Reed, to Moscow. Douglas Reed, the great writer, the great London Times writer, who wrote Far and Wide and Insanity Fair and The Controversy of Zion, which is online, I think. Douglas Reed was there for the London Times in Russia when the takeover was happening. And he said many of the Jews who had been flown in from Russia couldn't even speak Russian. They were speaking English and helping Lenin and them run Moscow. What he wrote, and Father Fahey quoted him, he wrote that once the communists had taken control, now the communists were in Moscow, and the Tsar's forces were going to boot them out again, but Wilson sent American troops under the direction of Bernard Barrick to stand between the Russians and to protect the communists and Lenin and so forth in Moscow until they could consolidate their power, okay? And but there was a lot of citizens groups who were working to throw these communists out. And here's what is written and quoted in Father Fahey, and I'm paraphrasing. Douglas Reed, the great London, one of the greatest reporters of the 20th century, who eventually was kicked out and wrote on his own. Douglas Reed said, I noticed that Jews were joining all the anti-communist parties, and their entire purpose was to prevent the Russians from pulling themselves together.
Infiltrating, you mean?
They were infiltrating the group. They were joining the groups and pretending to be anti-communist, but whenever there was an action, they always tried to confuse it and divert it into a dead end so the Russians couldn't pull themselves together. And there was all this infighting that we, quite frankly, have seen for 30 years in the Patriot Movement. Now, that doesn't say everybody that is trying to have make it happen, but there, we've got to keep our eyes open for who's for real and who isn't for real.
Well, you also have to consider they've had decades of experience to do this.
Centuries.
Well, yeah, but just from your example, that right there.
Yes. No, and this is one of, I've said to people many times, their greatest weapon is false opposition, where we think we got a leader, and then at the key moment, the leader sells us out. And that's when we get to the Vatican. We're going to get into that, because the greatest moral coup they have accomplished in the last 100 years was in 1958, when this ruling elite faction of Judeo-Masonry took over the Vatican, and we'll get into that.
Since you brought up the Catholic churches, we've got a real problem right now with people like Greg Szymanski and a lot of the RBN hosts trying to tell us that the Vatican is behind the world corruption. So since you brought this in, how about explaining what are you saying that's not the same as what they're saying?
Yeah, this is very critical to get a handle on this. First of all, let me, truth in advertising, and I know you all, I know that Daryl and I think yourself, you're not part of any organized religion. In fact, I think you've said you're very suspicious of organized religions, and I don't blame you. Let me tell you that, I don't blame you. I want to be truthful, though, in advertising, you know, as I always try to be. I am a Roman Catholic, born and raised Roman Catholic from the time I was baptized when I was probably 3 weeks old. I went to St. Margaret Cortona grade school, St. Xavier High School, and Xavier University. Now, St. Xavier High School and Xavier University are Jesuit institutions, okay? And a lot of people will be going, oh, he's a Jesuit. Listen, I was there in 1967 when I was a freshman to a sophomore. I saw the takeover reach in and change the Jesuits completely. The first year, it was the old Jesuits. They were teaching discipline. They were teaching self-denial. They were teaching all kinds of good habits and good, and then the next year it's like somebody came in with a mental nuclear bomb and all the good priests were out and we had all these crazy lefties starting to come in. It was a difference of night and day.
And what year was this?
It's 1967. This is 11 years after this.
And it was that obvious?
Oh, obvious.
Even to you as a teenager?
Totally. I didn't know what to make of it. All the rules just went away. We didn't have to wear like ties and coats anymore. All the rules of the centuries were away. And as a kid, I was like, well, this is okay. Hey, you know, I mean, no kid's looking to have to discipline themselves, you know. So, and also it was very hard. We had 3 hours a night of homework and all that. And secondly, you know, I just was like, well, I'm not the, they were also telling us now that really the Catholic religion was okay for the former generations, which were uneducated, and now we're growing up and all religions lead to the same place. In other words, they were preparing us for one New World Order religion. I don't even know. I don't say all these guys knew what they were doing, or even the lay teachers. It's just this was the propaganda coming down from the Vatican very quietly. People didn't know it, okay? And that's why I say in 58 there was this takeover. But I know a lot of Jesuits over the years, and many of them are dying off now because there's very few vocations to the priesthood for various reasons. The old Jesuits have no power, none of them. I've never known a Jesuit that had any power except to do their, they hear confessions, they counsel people, they counsel marriages, they teach people, and a lot of them are dying off now because they're in their 80s and 90s, the ones that were formed by the traditional rule. And the Jesuits always had a subversive factor in it, okay?
Well, how would you describe a Jesuit to somebody who's not Catholic? I mean, briefly, what would you say?
Yeah, Jesuit, St. Ignatius of Loyola began the Jesuits in 15-something or other. And he has, anyone could get a book called The Spiritual Exercises by St. Ignatius Loyola, where he tells you how to live a good and disciplined life. People can read that and see if they think it's written by a good guy or a bad guy. He's trying to help people to be self-disciplined, to think for themselves, to not let people manipulate their mind. But there was, the Illuminati always tried to use the Jesuits, and they did have outbursts of subversion over the centuries. They were put down. But after 1958, when the Zionists took over the Vatican, then, and I'm going to give you some examples of that, now they've got all the good Jesuits out, and the ones that are left are just usually mush brains. But the only Jesuits I've ever known that had any power in my lifetime was Theodore Hess, Father Theodore Hess of Notre Dame, who was part of the CFR, and Father Robert Drynan, who was a congressman, a horrible congressman, taking pro-abortion stands, everything against Catholicism, and of course they let him go. But, okay, and John McLaughlin, the McLaughlin Report, who's a former Jesuit who runs the McLaughlin Group on PBS, and he's not even a Jesuit anymore. They're the only three I know that have any power. Now compare that to 50% of the appointees of the Bush administration and the Clinton administration being Zionist Jews. Almost everybody that's around Bush and Clinton are Zionist Jews. The media is 100% owned by Zionist Jews. There's a fellow who wrote the song Morning Girl. I don't know if you remember that song from the late 60s called Morning Girl. It was written by a guy named Tupper Saucy, okay? Tupper Saucy goes around promoting this thing that the Catholic Church is really the power behind everything, and he's like Greg Szymanski. And years ago on email, I was on a forum with him, and I challenged him, if you will agree to it, I will meet you anywhere in a film debate on whether it's the Catholic Church, the Jesuits and the Catholic Church that's the ultimate power that's working here, or whether it's the Zionist Jews. But the debate's going to go straight up on the internet so everybody can see it. He never answered me. I'll give the same challenge to Greg Szymanski or anybody else. It's ridiculous when you see the power players, the bankers, every banker, Bronfman, Greenspan, Arthur Burns before Greenspan, almost every banker in the top echelons is a Zionist Jew. This is ridiculous that the Jesuits run it. Absolutely ridiculous. They can't name any names. So anyway, I hope that's a little explanation, but that's a little bit off the topic. I just wanted to give my background so people know what it is. And I am telling you, and I know, hey, if somebody, I'm going to tell you what a lot of people are going to think when I say this next thing. I just want to tell you where I'm coming from before I give you the punchline. I believe that the Roman Catholic Church is the true church founded by Jesus Christ. It was founded and was around since 33 A.D. The first Protestant church was Martin Luther, founded in 1521. The Protestants are not even 500 years old yet. And I'm not here to do a conversion show, so I won't go into that anymore. But I'm just saying, I believe it is the true church, and I believe it will rise again. But a lot of Protestants now, and even non-religious people, are going to be thinking, oh, right. A lot of people are thinking, the Catholic Church has been corrupt for centuries. It's the whore of Babylon, and it's coming down now. It's crashing, and we're glad it's crashing, okay? Now, I can understand people thinking that. A lot of Protestants are taken aback when I tell them I believe it's the true church, but I can understand why they think that. So I would just ask everyone listening and you to put this in the back of their mind. Don't believe anything I say. Just put it in the back of your mind. I'm saying that in the next generation, you are going to see these vipers that have taken over the Vatican in 1958 thrown out, and you're going to see the true Catholic Church rise again that was anti-communist, pro-discipline, pro-Western civilization, pro-freedom, rise again.
Well, why do you say they were taken over in 1958? How would you...
I'm going to tell you, but I just wanted to frame it so that people can understand how they might think about this. And let me say one thing. While Protestants have been saying since almost 1521 that Catholic Church is the whore of Babylon, okay? There's also been Catholic saints who have prophesied over the last 2,000 years that there would come a day when the Catholic Church would be in eclipse. Now, you know what an eclipse is. The sun is there, but the moon moves over, and it blocks the sun. That's an eclipse. The sun doesn't disappear completely. It doesn't go away, but it's blocked. In 1958, the faction that I work with believes that the Catholic Church went in eclipse. The counterfeit church, Judeo-Masonry, the Zionists, took over the Vatican and knocked the true pope off the throne and neutralized him, who we believe was Cardinal Siri, Cardinal Joseph Siri. He was the choice of Pope Pius XII, who died in 1958, and was anti-communist, was anti-Israel, etc. And who came on the throne in 1958 but Pope John the 23rd, so-called? We believe these guys are anti-popes. And the media, the Jewish media, immediately screamed, "Good Pope John, good Pope John." Now, you said, why do I say 1958? In 1958, on October 26th, why is this important? If people aren't Catholic, this is still important. I asked them to look in like they're just looking in on somebody else's business or something. Because the Catholic Church doesn't stand up against Judeo-Masonry, we have 50 million Catholics, or 80 million now in the United States, who are actually going to churches that are preparing them to be good little drones in the new dictatorship world order, the new Zionist world order, okay? Instead of having them being taught honestly what's happening. Why do I say 1958? Pius XII died on October 9th. On October 26th, the new conclave began to pick the new pope. And I'm going to give you a website in a minute so people can read about this in depth. On October 26th, white smoke, which is the sign a pope has been elected, white smoke at 5:55 p.m. on October 26th, it was a Saturday or a Sunday, white smoke went up for 5 minutes, 5 minutes. Vatican radio announced for 30 minutes, we have a pope, a pope has been elected, 30 minutes. The Swiss Guard came out to greet the new pope. They were obviously told new pope's been elected, get dressed, come out and greet him. And then nobody came out. Finally, they told them, well, there was a mistake. The priest who was manning Vatican radio said, "They are telling me a mistake has been made. This is not possible. The answer must lie elsewhere." In fact, in a nutshell, I will tell you, without being able to prove it in the short time here, but I'm going to give you the website, and it isn't still proven, but it's very strong. Nuclear threats apparently were used against the Vatican once the true pope was elected and said, "Look, get somebody else, or the Vatican will nuke the Vatican." And you don't remember Eisenhower and Stalin and Khrushchev were in power. The Vatican will be nuked; it'll be gone. We'll say it was a mistake. Whatever they did, they got this phony, this Mason, this agent for the a New World Order, John the 23rd, Ron Colley on the chair. And from 1958 till now, it has been complete change within the Catholic Church. And I'll go over that in a minute. Now, the website, which there's more going up on this website soon, but the website that has only three articles on it, if people, especially Catholics, are saying, what has happened to the Catholic Church? We got the Mass has changed, all the sacraments have changed, all the catechisms have changed. We got this, it's in 1990s, this pedophile priest thing broke out, and all the bishops are rolling the pedophile priests around, hiding them from parish to parish like they're more like a sex ring than they are a bishop's operation. Remember, I'm saying this as a Catholic now, that I'm recognizing what's happening, and I want other Catholics to recognize and look honestly what's happening within the structures of the Catholic Church. And the website is October1958.com. It's the month that Pope Pius IX died, and this conclave funny business happened, and then the pro-Zionist, pro-communist, anti-popes have been reigning ever since. It's October 1958. October spelled out 1958. October1958.com. Now, let me just run over a few quick examples, and then maybe we go to the other subjects, because at least we've introduced people of it. The difference is Greg Szymanski is trying to divert attention from the Zionist Talmudic Jews that are actually doing everything, okay? And he's trying to say, don't look at them. Look at the Catholic Church and the Jesuits. They're the ones that have been doing all this for centuries. No, that's not the way it is. The Vatican in 1958 just became one of the adjunct arms of Zionism while they tried to pretend that everything was still normal, okay? And let me give you some examples of why we say things switched in 58. One, there was this funny business with the smoke, and Pius XII is still attacked today by the mainstream media. The Pope that reigned from 1939 to 1958 is still attacked today. But John the 23rd came out, oh, good Pope John. They knew he was one of their men. John Paul II, who died recently, who was the kind of the movie star, he was such a charismatic figure, he was treated like a rock star by the media. When John Paul II, who we're saying is an anti-pope, because we're in the eclipse of the Catholic Church, where the Catholic Church is suffering like Christ suffered, in our opinion, that believe in the Catholic Church, in conformity with a lot of the prophecies, as we say, over the centuries. When John Paul II, the supposed true pope, died, do you remember the picture that was put on every newspaper in the country? It was George Bush Sr., Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, and George Bush Jr., the president, now George W. Bush, the president now, and Laura Bush, were all five of them were photographed kneeling in front of the coffin of John Paul II. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Now that is a clue to the ruling elite of the top secret societies, the Freemasonry, and the top Talmudist Jews. This is our man. We brought all of our most influential puppets here to kneel at his coffin. While still, Pius XII is vilified to this day when he's mentioned in the press. And now let me give you a few examples. When the Vatican was taken over, Roncalli immediately said, I'm calling the Second Vatican Council. Many people have heard of that. 1962 to 1965, you had the Second Vatican Council, okay? Now, I don't know if you remember when Mel Gibson's movie came out, The Passion of the Christ. If you do a Google search, there are hundreds of news articles where who was referring to Vatican II when Mel Gibson? See, Mel Gibson's movie refuted some of the false teaching of Vatican II. Okay, the party line of Abe Foxman and the ADL and most of these Jewish groups is, hey, the Pharisees didn't have anything to do with crucifying Jesus. I mean, even if you don't think Jesus Christ is God, most people think, gee, he seemed like a nice guy. You know, he seemed like he had some good peaceful teachings. You know, and the Pharisees engineered his crucifixion. Pontius Pilate in the scriptures, as bad as he was at times to put down real insurgents, he did not want to do it, and he washed his hands before the crowd and said he did it because he was afraid they were going to report him to Caesar. He didn't like it, and he washed it. So they want to falsify that. They want to falsify that and get themselves off there. But you remember that during that controversy, and if anybody wants to read up on this, I got a little-known website called adlagainstmel.com. ADLAgainstMel.com, and that Mel Gibson has nothing to do with it or anybody else. I mean, I don't have any influence or anything like that with. I did meet his dad once at the Barnes Review. I met his dad with some of my kids. He was speaking at the Barnes Review in 2003. But they may even not like the site, but I wrote it, ADL Against Mel. And what they did was all these rabbis like Abe Foxman and Jewish leaders were coming on TV before The Passion of the Christ came out and said, Catholics have to remember Vatican II and the change that they said the Jews were not responsible for the death of Christ. Well, Catholics were probably worldwide saying, huh? Most Catholics didn't even know what Vatican II did. But all these Jews are saying, remember Vatican II that their man John the 23rd called, because that was their council. They changed they didn't change the real Catholic Church, but it substituted this counterfeit church at Vatican II, okay? Now, in 1966, Eric, this is very important, and you can search this online. Look Magazine, which then became defunct within a year of this, Look Magazine ran an article called How the Jews Changed Catholic Thinking. That was the title of the article, How the Jews Changed Catholic Thinking, and that's online. And they went into how a priest who they don't name, who turned out to be Malachi Martin, was going between Cardinal Bea's office, who appeared to be a crypto-Jew, and the B'nai B'rith in New York City to get this concession at Vatican II, okay? And that would, so the, here, who's promoting Vatican II? The Jews. Okay, John the 23rd was an old man. He died in 1963. And they elected Pope Paul VI, so-called. He was an anti-pope, though. And he reigned from 1960. He occupied the Vatican from 1963 to 1968. He was a Murano Jew. Father Joaquin Arriaga Sanz of Mexico, who wrote the book The New Montanian Church, which you can get and read. He was a doctor of canon law, doctor of history, doctor of theology. He went to Rome in 1964. Said Paul VI is a Murano Jew. He pulled out the gold book of Italy and proved that his family, the Montini family, had been Jews going back for centuries. Some had been bankers, some had become Catholics, but he said these are Murano Jews, meaning secret Jews. He will attempt to change everything in the Catholic Church to be favorable to Judaism. Here's what Paul VI did from 1963 to 1968. This is everything I'm saying is critical. I could talk for 5 hours about this, but I just want to give people an overview. A Jewish guy in St. Louis named Gregory Baum, quote, converted, unquote. He became a Catholic, you see. He's immediately promoted all the way up to cardinal, which is the highest position in the church next to the Pope. There's about usually 50 to 80 cardinals. And Paul VI puts this Jewish guy in charge of every Catholic textbook in the country. And that's what I was seeing. They couldn't get to every diocese right away, but by 1967 they got to Cincinnati, and maybe in 1964 they got to Houston, or 1969 they got to San Francisco. In the whole world, the Catholic catechisms were changed so that there was no unfavorable reference to the Jews, and really they just took out everything. It's just a bunch of mush.
They rewrote those books you were using in your school, you mean?
As somebody said, it was the greatest book burning in history. All of the traditional books were thrown out. I mean, there's copies of
them. They were actually replaced. You saw them?
Actually replaced with mush. As Sister Monica, the great phonics nun who was in Cincinnati, she died at the age of 90 about 7 years ago. She was on to all this, Sister Monica Fulcher, and she said to me, they took everything out of the catechism, so the children are just prey to the television. They're like, she used to say they're like corks on choppy waters in the ocean, like you would throw a cork of a wine bottle out and it just would be on the ocean being buffeted about. And what are they being buffeted about by? They're being buffeted about by the Jewish propaganda over the media, all the corruption thing, and the schools are not saying anything about it. For instance, the occupied Catholic high schools in Cincinnati, they used to say, 5 BC, meaning 5 years before Christ, and 2000 or 1995 AD, meaning Anno Domini 1995 year of our Lord. The Jews didn't like that because that made the birth of Christ the center of the Western civilization. So they changed that, and it's in all the Catholics' books now. They call before Christ CE, or excuse me, BCE, before the common era, meaning this was the Jewish era before Christ, before the common era, and they call after Christ CE, the common era, meaning now the Jews and the Christians are sharing this the last 2,000 years. So they always taking things out. In Cincinnati, we have a reporter who's still alive named Ben Kaufman. I don't know if he's active yet. So he was a big Jewish reporter for the Inquirer and one of their controlling agents. He'd wear a Roman collar to look like a priest 1 year, then he'd go to, when David Irving came in, he called and threatened the people that put it on that the Inquirer was going to investigate their business. His wife, Harriet Kaufman, because remember, as Paul VI got in, he not only put Gregory Baum in charge, they put bad bishops in charge everywhere. Our bishop in Cincinnati died suddenly of a heart attack because Leonard Bernstein had done a very anti-Christian symphony, okay? I can't remember what it was called. And when he left town, Father Piepenbrier, a German priest, went down to Bishop Leibold in 1970 and said, if we don't speak out against this, we'd rather close up our doors. And Leibold was one of the old line, and he spoke out heavily against Leonard Bernstein. He was 58 years old, Eric. He died of a heart attack in the next few months. Now, that might have been a real heart attack, but I think it was an induced heart attack. And then they brought in one of their greatest agents to Cincinnati, Joseph Bernardine, who was a complete subversive. Every bishop was changed by the mid-70s just about to be these pro-Zionist bishops. But Bernardine allowed Harriet Kaufman, Ben Kaufman's wife, to go in and out of the archdiocesan office to make sure that the Jews approved, the local Jewish organizations approved every book that was going in the Catholic schools. That's been going on since the 70s. Okay? So, you see what's happening here?
Well, you're saying, yeah, you're making it sound like the, somehow this small group of Jews is replacing top Catholic leadership.
Well,
and books.
Yeah, well, wait a minute. A small group of Jews have replaced the American government, too.
Yeah, but I mean, you're saying they're doing it to the Catholic Church.
It has been done starting in 1958, and that's why I say go to October1958.com. To close this subject up, because we could go on forever. When John Paul II was elected, now, Paul VI was the anti-pope, in our opinion, from 1963 to 1978, turning the whole Catholic Church, changing all the Mass, the sacraments, changing the architecture. Every Catholic who's as old as me knows this happened. Some of them like it because they want it to be like, did away with all the disciplinary fasting rules. As Hutton Gibson said in his book, Paul VI, Legacy Catholicism, in 1979, he said, Paul VI like acted like an enemy agent who got control of the opposing army and destroyed all the discipline, and instead of fighting the enemy, he changed all the rules and had the guards start to watch each other instead of the enemies. That was a very excellent book. This is way before his son became famous.
And so now they're doing, like Kay Grigg says they do with the military and the media.
Right.
They're promoting the pedophiles and people.
Yeah, and of course, we'll mention that briefly. But it was, so then, just so people got their chronology down, in 1978, they could not get Wojtyla, who was the chosen man, John Paul II, on, and they had to, for an interim time, put on John Paul I, which, remember, there was a pope that died in 30 days, or we say is an anti-pope. He got on, and they killed him in 30 days. Remember that? There was a pope that was just
a real brief pope.
Yeah, that was 30 days, John Paul I, and he was just an Italian. He was not a secret Jew. He was just an Italian. He was started to investigate the Vatican Bank, and he was dead, okay? And there's all kinds of books out exposing all the suspicious circumstances around his death. He was brought in, they said he's a smiling pope because he smiled real big. And then when he was killed, and I remember this because it was 2 days before I got married, conflicting reports of his death were in Time and Newsweek magazine. That's always a sign of murder, and they can't get their story straight fast enough. And then later they joked and said, well, that shouldn't happen anymore that we have conflicting reports of how he died. But they said in the news media then worldwide started to say, boy, they're never going to elect the pope that sick again. Well, nobody even heard he was sick until he was dead. All they called him was the smiling pope. And again, I'm saying he was a dupe, but he was the third in the line of these anti-popes who were suffering under. John Paul II, when he died, a rabbi put out an article that's still on the internet that said, hey, incidentally, John Paul II was part Jewish. Well, we knew that, we had heard that for years. His mother had the Polish equivalent name of Katz. But John Paul II was apparently like Kirk Douglas. He looked not that Jewish, and he was a great front man for him. When Theodore Herzl, in 1903, asked to have an audience with Pope St. Pius X, one of the great popes of the 20th century, who was in office in 1903, Pius X said fine, so Theodore Herzl came. He was a so-called founder of Zionism. And he asked him in a hour-long meeting, would you endorse our efforts to get a Jewish homeland in Palestine? Okay? Pope Pius X said to him, listen, you don't accept our Savior, so we cannot support your enterprise. In other words, this is not God's will that you go in there violently take over this thing. Well, in 1991, John Paul II, who there's a lot of evidence was part Jewish, who all his biographers are Jewish, Tad Zoltz, the communist Carl Bernstein, the Watergate guy who brags about his dad being a communist. These are the biographers of John Paul II saying how great he was. But John Paul II recognized Israel. He did the exact opposite of what the true Pope Pius X said. He recognized them. And guess who was the man who did all of the legwork and footwork for that, or the preparations? Joseph Ratzinger, who's now sitting in the Vatican as anti-Pope Benedict XVI. And you'll notice the other day, Benedict suddenly criticized the Muslims. Remember that? Now,
right.
There are differences between Christianity and Mohammedism, no question. But when do you think he's ever going to come out and criticize the Talmudists? They don't do it. In fact, Benedict XVI is on the record saying the Jews have their own separate deal with God. They don't need to come to Christianity. This is a so-called pope saying this. So when people see this, they do occasionally make a little lip service, but the Vatican is working hand in glove. Abe Foxman and Edward Bronfen, they're in and out of the Vatican all the time. You and I couldn't get it in and out of there. With a
Bronfen, how does he get in there?
They just have audiences. There's pictures on the internet of the Trilateral Commission taking their picture with John Paul II. The foremost researcher in this subject is on this. The two of the three, all three articles on this website are written by Mr. Gary Giffray of Texas, and he has, in his slideshow, he would have one picture after another, after another, after another, showing the ruling elite and Jewish connection to these anti-popes since 1958. Never happened, you know, it was not happening before 1958. I don't say there weren't mistakes made at times in the Catholic Church, but not this type of planned subversion. One last thing here, well, two last things. One is ever since 1971, when this counterfeit church took, it was firmly ensconced in the Vatican. They'd been there 13 years when they had time to wipe out most of the good bishops, or they would compromise maybe the others. They're always trying to corrupt people, like Kay Griggs says about the military, so they're compromised men. They started recruiting sodomites, recruiting homosexuals for the seminaries worldwide and keeping the normal guys out. And that is in the book Goodbye, Good Men by Michael Rose. It's called Goodbye, Good Men. It's about this recruiting of the pedophiles now and of the sodomites. Now, Michael Rose does not draw the correct conclusion in his book because, like so many other Catholics, he's in denial about what's happening. So he's trying to say, well, maybe it's getting better now. He wrote it in like 2002. No. It's not, it's still going on. Remember, I'm talking as a Roman Catholic now. Any objective person, and of course all the Protestants are scandalized terribly, any objective, and the Catholics, I think millions, tens of millions of Catholics have quietly lost their faith in some way. They can see that these bishops' groups are acting like pedophile sex protection rings. They're not acting like religious organizations. I say that these bishops who have sent pedophiles from one parish to the other should be tried, convicted, and executed.
Well, it sounds like, you know, this would make sense, though, because if, you know, look at Kay Griggs, look at our government, look at our media, look at Europe.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they try to get into the Catholic Church?
Well, and I would even go further and say, for moral authority, it was essential that they neutralize the Catholic Church. See, people don't remember now, everyone knew the Catholic Church was the greatest force against communism morally in the world up till 1958. Let me say something else about this pedophile thing, because you, before in our little pre-show talk, you said, well, hasn't this gone on for centuries? The answer to that is, yes, there was always certain sodomites who wanted to get in the priesthood because it was a good place to, you know, you could
get away with a lot there.
Be supported. But until 1958, the rule was, if anyone is found out to be a sodomite, they cannot be ordained. If they have snuck in to get ordained, they are defrocked immediately. Okay? That was the rule. I'll give you an example of the difference. This was back in 1555. There's only been two popes that were made saints in the last 1,000 years. One was Pope Pius X, who I told you about before, that told Herzl the Catholic Church could not support their Zionist adventure. Okay? Down in
Palestine.
Down in Palestine. And the other one was Pope St. Pius V. In the 1555 to 1559. But in that time, the priests were found to be committing sodomy and pedophilia. There was maybe four or five that were a ring that was uncovered in the Vatican. Now, contrast this with what's happening today. When Pius V found out, he had them apprehended, he turned them over to the police, and he said, if these priests are found guilty, execute them. Okay? Now, that's the difference between now and the Vatican. The occupied Vatican of the counterfeit Church of Judeo-Masonry. Take somebody like Colonel Bernard Law from Boston, who moved dozens of pedophile priests around to abuse other boys in parishes without telling the parish that this guy was already found out to be a pedophile priest. When he was going to get convicted, the Vatican moved him over to Rome and gave him a position there so that he was outside the reach of the United States law officials at the local level. It's kind of like Dove Zakim, the thief who's 3.2 million is missing from the Pentagon, and he was the controller of the Pentagon during 9/11. He's now hiding in Israel so that nobody can get at him there. It's the same principle, you see?
Right, shift him around, but they keep him around.
Right. And nobody gets punished for anything. Because why? Because they're doing the work that the top Judeo-Masonic forces want them to do. Corrupt the world, make people weak so they're pawns in the New World Order.
Well, plus they're instilling this, we must defend Israel at all costs, and that this is Jesus' birthplace, and we must get those Muslims out of there.
Exactly. And I'll tell you, one other thing, this is a thing that Gary Giffray brought out in this slide presentation I saw once. When we were young, Cardinal Menzenti in Hungary, the communists had taken Cardinal Menzenti captive, okay? At the same time Cardinal Mazzini was captive in the 60s and early 70s, guess who was traveling around? And if Cardinal Mazzini was captive in the American embassy, and Cardinal Mazzini, who was a great anti-communist fighter in Hungary, you can look him up on the internet too, he said, if anybody is allowed to travel in and out of a country, communist country, he is one of them. Okay, we heard this growing up all the time in grade school and in high school to some extent. Of course, it's, all this stopped in 67, but I heard it elsewhere. If anyone is allowed to travel freely in and out of a communist country, he is one of them. Well, guess who was traveling freely all over the world, visited our phony Archbishop Bernardine in Cincinnati at least twice? Carl Wojtyla, Cardinal Wojtyla, John Paul II. The future John Paul II was traveling anywhere in the world he wanted all that time. And when he was, quote, elected pope, we would say elected anti-pope in 1978 by the counterfeit church, the Polish newspaper put out an article, or the World Press put out an article, and this may even be on the internet too. If not, we're going to put it up soon. The article said, Polish government praises choice of pope. That was the headline. Polish government praises choice of pope. And me and a few other people, we say, what has happened to everybody's memory? How can everybody not realize that if not only they're letting him travel, but they praise his choice as pope, how are all these adults that we taught us forgetting that that means he's one of them? You see what I mean?
That was when the government was still communist.
Yeah, that was when the government, that was 1978.
So that was the communist government.
It was 1978, so it was the communist government praising the communist choice of pope. So we've probably done enough on this subject, but October1958.com. I know this information, as much as I've done, which is a pinprick of what is there. So even if you're not Catholic, it has got to be of interest of the subversion, the complete reversals that have happened within the Catholic Church. So anyway.
Well, it would explain this Judeo-Christian stuff and the Jesus camps and all the rest.
Yeah, listen, you would be hard-pressed to find the term Judeo-Christian anywhere before Vatican II, the phony Jewish-run council, 1962 to 1965. You would be very hard-pressed to find the term Judeo-Christian. Now, all these national figures, they can't say Christian without saying Judeo-Christian, which incidentally is like saying
Judeo-Islamic or something.
Yeah, or iron wood or hot cold. And the reason is, quickly since you brought it up, the reason is there's a threefold brainwashing. One is the 85% of the Jews in Israel are not Hebrews. They're not descended from the same people as Jesus and Mary. They're basically Khazars, so they're not even the same people. Two, and Michael Hoffman proves this in his book, Judaism's Strange Gods, and Carol Valentine has it up on a website called come-and-here.com, comeandhere.com with dashes in between come and here. She shows, and Michael Hoffman shows, that the Jewish religion today is not the Jewish religion of the Old Testament, is the Talmudic religion that is so despising of the non-Jews and hatred of Christ, the Talmudic religion that it concocted, basically, the rules were all concocted basically after the time of Christ. So there's like this, the term Judeo-Christian today, it gives the impression, well, the Jews accept the Old Testament and we accept the Old and the New Testament, New Testament for the Christians. But in reality, the Jews aren't running by the Old, they're running by the Talmud, which is totally anti what Christians think it is.
If what you're saying is true, the Catholics ought to be looking, they got to be looking at this. You know, you get these people saying we got to replace Bush. Well, if the Catholic Church is one of their organizations, this shows even more how more ridiculous this replace Bush nonsense is.
Yeah. Think of it as the occupied Vatican, and the every building in the world is occupied.
Well, the infiltration is beyond what anyone would have thought, is what you're saying.
And of course, because of the nature of the Catholic Church, though, if you could shove the true pope aside and put in an anti-pope and appear to be orthodox for a while and work very slowly, then you could corrupt everything from the top down. The first thing is to put all your people in place before you start to really move.
Well, the big advantage is they get access to the children.
That's correct.
And that's what they're doing with these churches and these organizations, these religious organizations.
Yes. Now, the Protestants have the counterpart in these phonies, Zionists, Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell. The good guys like Ted Pike are only heard on a few places, and the Protestants are being told, you're if you're going to be a Christian, you have to be a Zionist Christian. Let me tell you a quick story about that, because I know somebody over the weekend that was on a I think it was Family Forum. They had a big gathering in Washington, D.C. with thousands of Zionist Christians, so-called. I call them the phony Zionist Christians. These are all the fundamentalists that follow Jerry Falwell, Pat Robertson. One of the speakers was Bill Bennett, who's a Catholic guy who has sold his soul to the Zionists and the neocons, okay? And the person that was there, who's a perfectly reliable witness, told me, this person said, look, these Christian fundamentalists are now more pro-Israel than they are pro-America. They're more loyal to Israel than they are America. They only care about Israel's faith. Bill Bennett whipped them up into, I guess, a frenzy, because when he said this, this person told me the place went wild. It was like they were cheering a rock star. It was just like pandemonium of cheering. And he said at one point after he built them up, he said, about the United States of America, he said, we did what we needed to do in Hiroshima. Now we need to do what we need to do in Iran. And the place of these brainwashed, brain-dead, deluded Christians went wild with applause, Eric. In other words, the neocons, as you know, are trying to figure out if they can get away with dropping a nuclear bomb on Tehran.
Oh, I know. They're trying.
And well, hopefully they won't make it.
So what you're saying is that they have control of the Protestants through people like Pat Robertson and
Jerry
they got
Falwell.
Control of the Catholic Church. They got Scientology. I mean, what?
Yeah.
They're getting all the religions.
Yeah.
All the media, the banking. I mean, this is total control.